Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. I'm very happy to have on my show tonight the band We Three. I've known all of them for quite a while, actually, and especially the bassist, Louis, I've known for many years. We actually did sessions together many years ago. And these guys had we had them on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast radio show, and they had just come out with their EP at that time. And I'm happy to announce this is their full album is out now, Occupy Your Mind. And it's with the band is Lou Castro on bass, Billy Joe Wiseman on guitar, and Jim Javier on drums. And it's great to have you guys here. I'm going to open up with a clip. Great song. This is a really cool, it's one of my favorites. It's called She Knows She's Got It. So let me play this clip to kind of give you a little idea what the band's about. We got a bunch of stuff to get through.
She knows she's got it.
Welcome, everybody. It's good to have you on the show. It's been a while, long overdue, but I'm glad to have you guys here. Let's talk a little bit about the making of this album. You got some interesting people on it. And this song, at the very end of this clip that I was playing, you'll notice in the back the string type of thing that was happening in the back, which is your synth guitar, if I'm correct.
Yes.
And so you guys have really expanded and broadened out, and you'll hear it in some of the clips that I'm going to play tonight. But tell me a little bit. Lou had mentioned this when I had seen him over at the amp show, Lonnie's amp show, and he had mentioned, you know, he had showed me the rough mixes. This was a little while ago, and he had talked about this whole thing about, you know, you guys had gone in and redid a lot of stuff, and you were pulling together this whole album. So I don't know who wants to start out. Lou, what happened?
What happened?
Well, how did it? Tell me a little bit about the development of this album. It's called Occupy Your Mind, everybody.
Occupy Your Mind. It's on ITI Records. Jimmy had gotten a hold of ITI. They expressed interest in our music, And they said, hey, we'd like to put this out. And we said, well, that's great, but you can't put it out like this. So basically we went back in, messed with the stuff that we didn't like, put some new songs on it, remixed it, remastered it, basically, you know, tried not to strangle each other in the studio while we did it. And, you know, we've just worked really hard. We're really happy about how it came out, and it seems that the listening public is responding as well.
Did you re-record a lot of the songs, or did you use some of the existing? Because I notice in this clip, that kick drum is like in your face, and it's much more present and much more.
That was probably from the remixing. That wasn't a different
that
drum
was the same,
track
because it really is punchy.
Yeah. No, it's slamming. But no, that was just remixed and re-edited, you know, painstakingly.
Except you put that vocal thing at the beginning that wasn't there before.
There are three tracks. There are three basic tracks that we did on tape.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we did those at my friend Chuck Kavoris' studio, Slide Away, mm-hmm. over in Shadow Hills. So those are on tape. The rest of them are all done on Pro Tools, and we did that at my house in Van Nuys with my good friend Arlen Shirebaum.
Oh, okay. So you tracked it. Oh, that's pretty cool. And then you went in and had it mixed.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And we sweetened it. Some of it we did at the house. For instance, when we did the guitar synth stuff, we did that at the house.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really, I mean, it's a pretty diverse album, and there's a lot of different influences. And I also, too, I noticed the last time I had talked to you, you had just, you were an endorsee. I'm talking to Billy right now. You're endorsing for Hofner, and
yes.
You had just gotten the jazz guitar. And I took some pictures before the show, and I'll post these up on after the show, of some of the other guitars. So you expanded a lot because there's a lot of different sounds that you're using on this album. It's pretty interesting. But let me ask you real quick on that song, She Knows She's Got It. What were you using?
That's actually the J17. That's the big jazz guitar. And it was recorded on tape. And it went through a tube amp. And we did double track the melody where it goes do-da-da-da-da. We just sort of threw it in. They said, you know, it's throw something in there. So I came up with that little line, and they said, well, let's put a different like an Allman Brothers thing to it. And then we did that. So now to be able to play it live, I have to play all the fours, you know, together. But it works out. But yeah, that's
a great sound. I mean, that's a great that guitar was, I remember when you brought it before, it was a great guitar. But you did some mods to it. Let's talk about that real quick.
Yes. There's some pickups from, through Seymour Duncan, Benedetto pickups, you know, in that guitar. And I did change the bridge because it just had a straight wood bridge. And I put a tune-o-matic because it has to be in tune. Also, I hit the guitar pretty hard with the pick. And every time I'd play, the whole bridge would move. So what we did is we put sandpaper under the bridge rather than than gluing it down. I did that with my ES-175. I actually glued the bridge in at one point, and then I had to take it off, and then I put a wood block in there, and then I screwed in the bridge in there. But this time I didn't want to. It's a carved top on this guitar. It's really nice, this Hofner guitar, and I didn't want to, you know, start drilling any holes or anything. So. But other than that, it's got a great tone.
And then one other thing, I'm going to play some other clips, but I have to mention because you guys were showing me the guitars before the show. Both you and Lou use a thing called fat fingers.
Yes.
Explain that a little bit.
Well, it came up through Aspen Pittman. He was a tech for...
he was a creator of Groove Tubes, basically.
Groove Tubes, yes.
And he was also Jaco's bass tech.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So he made a brass plate for Jaco's bass, and he thought, well, I've done this for Jaco, but I don't want to make it for every bass that's on the market, so he came up with a simple brass fitting that just fits on the neck.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it does away with the dead spots in the neck, and it increases the sustain. Now, if you've got a Fender bass, you know there's dead spots usually on the C-sharp.
Mm-hmm.
It takes it away.
Yeah, no, that's always been a problem. I've had to use like compression to try to even it out to get it where the weak notes on a bass. But
right.
Now you don't have to do that. That's kind of cool. But it's Well, if you're using it on the song, it's obviously well balanced because the guitar and the bass. Now, that bass, again, what were you using? And I know it was a frontless.
On Chino, She's Got It.
Mm-hmm.
Chino, She's Got It is three basses.
Three basses.
Okay, so the loop is a Fender, it's a 97 Fender jazz bass. And then there's the Music Man is playing just one note. It's just playing the E. Boom.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. And then the melody is played on a John Carruthers 5-string fretless that I found on Craigslist. And there's no effects on it or anything. That's just the way it sounds.
Well, it's not chorused. It sounds like it's chorused.
It's not chorused.
Oh, wow. That's a great sounding bass.
It is. It John is. Carruthers I'm really fretless. Lucky to have it.
So anyway, no, that's a that sound that just it's a great hook on there too on the song. Now I'm going to play something else. I'm going to play another clip from the album, and I notice everybody out there that the diversity on the album. There's a lot of different things they're doing. I mean, it's got a big. It's obviously a jazz oriented album, but a lot of different influences. But this one's interesting because it has John Klemmer on sax, and I want to hear the story about that. But let me play the clip. This is called After Hours, and you can hear the interplay between Billy on guitar and on John Klemmer on the saxophone. Where did I put it? It's right here. There we go. Now, what were you using on that? That's a great sound. It's real clean.
Yeah, that's the J17 again.
Mm-hmm.
I should also preface that the strings on that are really extra stiff. The E that I use is an 18. And then the B is a 16.
Oh, so the E is high.
The B is a 20, and then the G is a 26. Sorry.
Oh wow, that's heavy.
And you can hear when I'm actually hitting the string. You can hear that slapping. It almost sounds like it could be a solid body, but I'm just hitting it really hard to try to get that sort of funky
mm-hmm.
sound.
You've got to mention the stone pick.
And that's the other thing. I'm using a stone pick that gives you that sound, and it's a. A lot of times when people would watch me play, sometimes they would think, oh, they didn't even see the pick, but because it's sort of hidden, because I get a little bit of the flesh and mm-hmm. a little bit of the attack at the same time. So one of my favorite guitarists was Pat Martino, and he was the one that actually got me into using these stone picks. And then also John McLaughlin, he also used.
But, I mean, with that heavy a gauge string and the stone pick, that has to be really rigid. I mean...
It's you can control the technique. You can play faster because there's not that little bit of slap or movement of the string. When you hit it, it comes right back. So I can go like that, and it stays right there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one good thing. And also want to also say that isn't a keyboard. That's a guitar going through a processor. It's sort of like a doubler. From Digitech, they made that Super Whammy. I use it because it's got a really great doubling effect, but it sounds like a keyboard. So that's what that other guitar sound.
That second guitar, yeah. Kind of organish,
yeah.
Type of a.
That's a guitar, but it gives you that sort of a Rhodes type sound. But yeah, it's all that guitar.
So how did you get the gig with? How'd you get Klemmer to come on the album?
John Klemmer. Well, we kept saying, "Wow, we got Klemmer to come down." Basically, a friend of ours,
Bob LaPierre.
Bob LaPierre, God bless you, Bob. Bob LaPierre was doing some work on John's house, and he mentioned
he saw John Klemmer's saxophone just sitting there in the living room. And Bob's a really good friend of ours, come to a million gigs around town, very supportive. And he's basically a good talker. And he started talking, and he's like, "So, John, what's that?" He didn't know who he was. "I see you got a sax there. Do you play? I got friends. You should come on down and jam with them." And, you know, it sparked his interest and hooked us up with his number. And we started talking, and it just fell together.
We sent him a track, and we sent him, you know, a chart. And then we didn't hear from him, and I'm getting ready to go to the studio, so I called him up at his house, and I go, "Hey, John, what are you doing? I'm going to the studio. You're coming or not?" He goes, "Can you pick me up, man?" And I go, "Sure." So I go and pick him up and you know, drove him down there. We took a couple hours. He cut the track, and that was the end of it.
God, his tone is still legend. I mean, it's great. I mean, the riffs he's playing is just beautiful.
Yeah, it's pretty trippy. We feel really honored to have him on the record. He's really a good guy.
So that was a newly recorded one. Now let's talk a little about that, because it's got a lot of air in the piece. You know, even though in that little middle section you got the second guitar going in there, and it gets a little fuller, but it's a very open sound, which I think is really it's great, because it just gives you a lot of room, especially that echo that's going on in Klemmer's sax.
Well, we are only a three-piece, and we use loops and stuff, and we try to make it sound as full as possible. And even with just three pieces, it doesn't sound like there's three guys playing. It sounds like more, just because the way we use our instruments and everything. And you got Jim is very colorful as a drummer, and he knows about tones and textures and stuff.
Yeah, no, I've heard you guys live, and it's a pretty full sound. Now, first, since I'm talking to you, Lou, what bass was that? And how was that recorded?
That's the Sadowski, and that's used in an Avalon U5, and that's it.
Oh, so it's all direct.
Well, the U5 is a preamp.
Right, but I mean, is that a regular like mic preamp, or is that a bass, a special for bass?
You can use it for a lot of different things. I use it for bass, but you can also use it for acoustic guitar. You can use it for acoustic bass. It's kind of like one of those things that a lot of people, it's kind of like one of those go-to things that people use.
The Avalon. Okay, that's cool. That's great sound. Now, the drums, did they pull the mics back for that? Because it's a really, I can feel the room. If that's synthetic room, that's a good synthetic room. But I mean,
right, because this was at Chuck's, like he was saying, Chuck Kavoris's room. And with all the analog stuff, I had brought my, normally I play my Yamaha drums, but it was just a one-day hit. And he had a in-house, like modern set of Slinglins in there, like the modern Slinglins. And he really didn't want to have me take them down and set these up and eat up another 2 hours. So I just said, we're just going to do a few tunes. I said, that's fine. So sat down, and I believe he had just, you know, it was like a four-piece basic, and the tunes we were doing were really groove-related, you know, "She Knows She's Got It," that song,
Malibu,
After Hours, and Malibu,
right.
not a whole lot of drums, just, you know, groove, fills here and there, but you didn't need a whole lot, so that was fine. And if I remember correctly, he had normal miking on there. It was already set up.
Was it pretty close, or was it farther back? I mean, did you have room for the air?
There was a lot of stuff in this place, so I think it was pretty much closer to the drum, because it was just a lot of equipment in-house there. And I mean, with the recording went fine. But if I remember correctly, it was kind of a normally miked drum
fairly
kit.
Close.
Yeah. We had a good sound to work with. You know, a lot of the stuff, you know, we just try to make sure that the tones are right and the levels are right. And then we can sit there and figure out what reverbs we want to use, how much room we want to use, what kind of mood we're creating, with the tools that we have at our disposal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I noticed that it's got a good room, whether that's synthetic or not. It sounds very open and like a room tone, like you were
right.
Tracking live.
And also, though, because this was mixed at Glenn Nishida's place, mm-hmm. Pacifica. And for this recording, he remixed everything. So it was really, Glenn did a masterful job. And he did, especially more so for Shinoshi's Got It, he did some sound enhancing and replacing, like that kick. He had a lot to do with that.
Yeah,
that was not, you know, just those drums. He said, hey, can I try some stuff? And he did, and it was sounding killer. So,
yeah.
Okay. Keep that.
We can live with it.
Yeah. It's tough for drummers now because I've seen other producers talk about some of their hit songs for like radio, and the guy has four bass drums that he's mixing in there to blend this like super bass drum. That's a huge sound, and sometimes they lower them and
right.
They do all this stuff, and it's like as a normal drummer playing acoustically, that's tough to emulate, you know?
Right, right.
Well, it kind of creates a paradigm for the band, though, because they've got to sound that good live. And I don't know if they always are able to do that.
No. And the thing is, for you to do that, you got to have a rack of outboard to do those effects. It's, you know, like an octave box or something like
that. Yeah, we're lazy. We don't want to move a bunch of gear.
I hear you. And then on that guitar part, what were you using? You're using the J17, but what amp were you using?
I have a Boogie amp that was made from Randall Smith back when he was making them in the garage from 1974.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all tube, everything was handmade, hand-wired. And that's my main amp.
Mm-hmm.
It just sounds amazing,
and that the J17 had those heavy gauge strings on that too.
Yes,
because it has a nice. There's a little bit of breakup in the sound, but it's not a lot, and it's what I call bloom. It just kind of gets the overtones.
That one I was adjusting the sound. Like this was an old Boogie. This is when they tried to make it. Switching so you could channel switching so you could get like a good distortion sound and then mm-hmm. a clean sound. If you had a really good distortion sound, the clean sound was never there. And then if you had a good clean sound, the distortion sound would just scare people.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is I gave it a little bit of edge to it, but not enough to like make it sound like it was.
Now the Boogie, do you use that live
all the time?
That's your main.
That's
amp
the main
for
amp
live.
Right now.
And since we're talking about live right now, what do you use, Lou, for live, your bass amp?
I've got a Crown 4002 with a Fender tube preamp and a Baggin 410 cabinet. If it's a smaller gig, I use a Line 6 Combo 400, which is 450 watts, and it's got two 10s in it.
Wow, that's small. That's small, but it must sound huge.
It sounds great, and you add another speaker case to it, mm-hmm. and it becomes 650 watts.
And then you're using your Yamaha kit.
Yeah, it on most stuff it's the Yamaha Maple Custom Absolutes. Snare actually is the snare is different. It's one of those Pearl free floaters,
mm-hmm.
Maple free floaters. That I mean, all the stuff I found on Craigslist, a lot of it.
Yeah,
and then various cymbals, mostly Zildjian, a little bit of Sabian. But
what do you have? Two top toms and two floor toms?
Usually it's a four-piece, but if I pull out everything, it's a 8-inch tom. I like the smaller toms.
Mm-hmm.
8, 10, and then a 14 on the floor. And for live, usually it's a 20-inch kick,
mm-hmm.
With the Maple.
It's a pretty simple kit setup, but it sounds pretty full.
Yeah, small and punchy. Really nice, full sound with punch.
Yes. Well, I'm going to play. Let me play another clip. I think I've heard this one when we had a jam session of many years ago, and you guys came down and you played, and you just sat and you guys did like a set almost. And I think this was the song that you did, Aquabong, that had like a real prog feel to it. So I'm going to play this because you're doing a lot of time signature changes. But let me play the clip. This is on the album. It's a very cool groove, and there's some really interesting lines in it. Here we go.
Thank you.
a great group. That's the. I think I heard that you guys have played that for a while.
Yeah.
And it was we were at this jam session. We were testing out all these different amps and stuff, and you guys played that. I just thought that was cool. That's a great. It sounds. I mean, that's a great take. But it was even ballsier live.
You want to know the story behind that song?
Sure.
We came to rehearsal one day, and I think it was Jim or Billy goes, "Hey, you guys remember that song Aqualung?" And we're sitting there going, yeah. And we go, nah, 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 nah. Hey, what would happen if we rewrote it? And so we came up with this groove in 6-4, and then he came up with the melody, and it just kind of organically came together in about 5 minutes. And it's basically blues is all it is.
A simple blues.
It's just I mean, I love that. That groove is just a killer groove. Now, all right, let's talk equipment. So what are you using on that one?
Well, you didn't get to the solo, but if you did, we overdubbed we did the song before, but when we changed it, we did put that's the very thin guitar that I have, the green one that mm-hmm. I have a picture of. And with a little bit of distortion for the solo, just a little clipping. You didn't hear that part, but I did overdub what was on there before, so that you're hearing a double guitar. And that guitar, I only have 14s on the top. 14, 16.
Wow, that's still... My hands are bleeding just thinking about that. But no, I'm just kidding. But that guitar, now that's the guitar you're using at that beginning with the little...
Well, that's the melody part. Now, you hear all the synth parts. That's my guitar synthesizer.
Yes, I noticed. Yeah. And that just adds another dimension to it, which I think is a plus for you guys. I think that little chord thing going on, it just adds depth. It gives it more space.
The cool thing about this guitar is that you can play... using that sound, but also have the guitar sound at the same time. It's like the old guitar organ that they had years ago. It's based on the same architecture, and all you have to do is just hold down, and it makes the MIDI connection of the note. You can play with your fingers, like Ella, you know, Van Halen, and it'll.
You using the sounds from that instrument, or you had mentioned that you went nuts when the MIDI?
We were using the sound from Pro Tools. Yep. We have a little Pro Tools studio at our rehearsal studio, so we would just sit there and scroll through. Oh, we like this one. Let's use this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and no, if you ask me what sound it was, I can't tell you. All
no,
I know is we
it's
we,
a cool sound.
We went in there, and once we got the part, then we sit there and just did a little bit of slicing and dicing so that it. That the notes would come at the right time and end at the right time.
Mm-hmm. No, that's one of your best live songs when you guys play live. That's one of my favorites to listen to. But it's really cool. I mean, it's an interesting interplay. And I'm going to play another clip from one of the other songs that shows the interplay between Lou and Billy, because there's a lot of... With three guys, you got to move it along. You got to keep it interesting and stuff. But there's a lot of things that you guys, it's natural, the interplay between you.
You want to do it in such a way so that it's not overly busy and you can hear us talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the three of us. It's a three-way conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is try to stay out of each other's way but be able to react to what's happening in the moment.
So the... which one I want to play? Oh, here it is. This one's called Darkness Fall. Let me see. I think this kind of demonstrates this clip of that interplay between you guys. Here, let me take a listen. But I think that best shows that there's that. I love that bass line. That's a great bass line, and then how you counter it or you answer it is really good. And that's the J17?
Actually, that's my Gibson ES-175 that was a high school present for graduating.
Tell them how you got it strung.
Oh, on that guitar, I had a 20 on the front at that point. I went down to an 18 for the J17 because it was a new guitar, and I wanted to sort of break it in a little bit.
But that Gibson, didn't it hurt that neck? I mean, their necks are not...
Well, it was good for like many years, but eventually I noticed a little crack, and I took it to someone, and they tried to fix it, and then it sounded a little weird. We played a gig this one morning, and there was a little bit of a wind, and the guitar fell over and right on the stage. But it was a carpeted stage. But then I picked it up, and the strings were like, and it was broke.
Yeah. So that song came out of a jam too. That's another thing where we were sitting there writing, and it just fell together. It's like one of those things we've played together so much, and we kind of read each other really well. So it's real easy for us to come up with an idea and flesh out in a matter of minutes and go, okay, it's soup.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, it's obvious that you guys, there's a connection there. And the mood, it's a great mood. I mean, that piece just has a whole
I think you like the wah-wah guitar because it reminds you of Wah-Wah Watson or something.
Well, it reminds me of a lot of movies. I'm a big movie buff, so I'm like, what, that wah-wah-wah. But, I mean, it's just a cool sound. And the synth thing works really well in there, too. Now, when you guys play these songs live, when you do them live, do you flesh them out more and make them longer? Or do you pretty much stay to the songs?
Oh, no. What you hear on the recording is just a starting point.
Ah, okay. So you guys you improvise and go beyond that.
Yeah, but the trick is not to get so out there that you lose track of what the song is. So it's a fine line.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fine line. But we write in areas of uncertainty. So if we want to veer left, we can.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm just trying to imagine where you would go. Because that groove is a great groove just to do things over. That bass line, just laying that
Well, it's
pattern.
Kind of trip-hop and it's kind of electronica. So in that case, it's like when you play and then when you drop out and leave a space and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, you dub. Like dub music, like Bob Marley and all that stuff.
Now, which bass were you using on that?
That's the Music Man.
That's the Music Man?
That's the 89 Music Man Stingray.
Oh, wow. That's a great sounding bass. The what I wanted to ask also, too, that was the Mesa Boogie?
Yes.
That's the Mesa Boogie. Now, you mentioned that you had a twin. Do you ever use the twin live?
I used to. It just, like the last, I got another car a couple years back, and then I thought, I started using the Boogie again. I sort of put it away for just special events, and then I just started using it, and I'm like, you know, this thing sounds great. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what I did. I just started using it
a lot of times. The twin, he'll use it in rehearsals.
Mm-hmm. Because I know that's a great sounding amp too, and you have a vintage one, right?
Yeah, it's only 2003.
Oh, it's a newer one.
Yeah, it's a newer one. They call it the Evil Twin because you can. It only has one channel, but you can use a foot switch, and then you can get sort of an overdriven sound too.
Oh, okay. So it has more in it than the standard twin.
Yeah, but it's called actually. It's not the Fender Twin. It's called the Twin Amp. It had 100.
Oh, okay.
It has 100 watts RMS. It's tube everything, tube tremolo, mm-hmm. tube reverb.
No, that's just a great groove. Now, I want to ask you about one of the other guests that you had, and I'm going to play this clip. It's called The New Girl with Cleto and Escobedo.
Cleto Escobedo III.
Escobedo.
From the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Now, tell me how that happened. How did you get Cleto on?
Billy.
Well, I met Cleto many years ago. I used to teach jazz guitar at the University of Las Vegas mm-hmm. for several years in the late 80s. And he happened to be going to school at the same time that I was teaching there.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually met Jimmy Kimmel, too, at the same time a couple times. I saw him hanging out there. Didn't really know it was him or knew much about him, which was sort of funny. But so just take off like a couple years, you know, further ahead. Turns out that I did a thing for Paula Abdul a few years when I came out here. And also, Cleto did some work with Paula. It was actually didn't play sax. He was doing a lot of the background singing and stuff like that. And then he got onto the Kimmel Show. I didn't even know that he was on it. And he stopped by a local place that I play a lot of times, just by myself, sometimes with the group. And we reconnected again and started talking. And I said to him, "Hey, would you ever want to play on a track? You know, we're thinking of doing a new CD recording." He said, "Yeah, sure." And came up with this tune and asked him, and the rest is history.
Basically, we sent him the track, and he recorded it there at the Jimmy Kimmel studio. It took him like about an hour. He sent it back to us, and he goes, "I hope you like it." And we sat there, and, you know, it was great. We were really happy to have him. Thank you, Cleto.
Yeah.
All right, let me play the clip, and then we'll talk a little more about what you guys did on it. That's interesting. There's a lot of different guitars in there that you're doing. There's a lot of things. And then I got a question for Louie, too. You're using a steel string or nylon string?
It's a nylon string from many moons ago when I when I wanted to learn classical guitar years ago. I was a big Yes fan, you know, growing up, and I got into classical, you know, with, you know, music. Mm-hmm. And then I played a little bit of that. And then when I got to college, I found out that you had to play something, and I had to play classical guitar for a few years until they let me actually play electric guitar. So that's a Hernandez guitar. If you remember, Jose Feliciano used to use that particular model, and that was the one I wanted, and it was like their top of the line back then, and it sounded really great.
And it's a great sounding guitar.
Yeah, the way that we recorded is took a crown. One of those microphones that they use,
the boundary one,
and then I taped it to the top of the guitar.
Oh wow!
I know it sounds crazy.
Inside or outside?
On the outside.
Okay.
And then I play along, but it just picked it up really, you know, it had that sound right there.
It cuts. It's an interesting sound, and it works well with the depth of the other guitars. Now you're using two other. I hear a clean type of jazz sound and a dirtier one.
Yeah, it's actually the. It's the J17 for the melody and the chords. And also I did the guitar synth again with all those pads
right.
back. Now, we were just getting up to the solo right there. I have an old Hagstrom Swede that was handmade in Sweden. And that was actually that little solo riff right there was...
Well, the clean guitar that you're doing the riff, there's another guitar doing something that's a darker, dirtier.
That's the Hagstrom Swede.
Swede.
Going through a Mesa Boogie preamp. They made these preamps a few years back. and I was going through that, and then right into the board. But it sounds really
good. It's a great sound, and it works well. And there's a lot of stuff going on. You have three guitar parts happening. Mm-hmm. I assume you wrote all that out for him to play, or did he just listen to what you did and just followed you?
I gave him a chart, and then that's how he did it, yeah.
So he, yeah, because it's just, and he's tight, man. That's pretty good for an hour. It's like going in there and doing that. Damn.
We don't mess around.
That's right. But now, Louie, what bass were you using there, first of all?
That's the Sadowski.
Sadowski, okay. Now, what I want to ask you is, that's a busy line, but it works. So how did you approach, I want to know how you approached doing that bass line under him. Because he's got all that stuff. That, the lines are happening, and you're doing something too. But it's not quite counterpunnel, but it's a very active bass line.
The biggest thing is just, again, to stay out of his way. Okay, so I'm just looking for the space. It's kind of counterpunnel, but it kind of isn't, because I don't know if the counterpoint would totally work with what he's doing.
It works. It actually kind of is counterpunnel, but you're doing this groove, but it's moving.
He's almost doing like a Jimi Hendrix, Curtis Mayfield kind of guitar thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
again,
I love those rhythm little.
Yeah.
Fills.
So I'm just trying to stay out of his way and just try to answer back, and at the same time work with Jim too.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a little bit.
It took.
Yeah, it took.
You
a
had
little
to
bit.
Play around with it to get.
I had to play around with it. I'll admit it.
Mm-hmm.
I had to do what Verdeen White or Paul McCartney would do. I had to do like 9 or 10 takes before I said, okay, I think this is okay.
That's interesting, because it's not easy to do that. I mean, to be able to put some of that kind of, because it's kind of melodic what you're doing too in there on the bass line, but to do it and it still fits. It's kind of an interest. I know that part of it is from you guys playing for so long. You just know what the pocket is, and you know where they. And then Jim, you just followed it like perfect.
Yeah, with the drums that on that track, it's basically, you know, four on the floor, you know, pocket, you know, just laying that right down there. I know with Lou, you talk about his takes. He had done a bunch, and then he had we had what we thought. I thought it was cool. He went the extra mile, like at home at night in the studio, like, hey, would we show up to rehearsal the next week? Hey, I threw new part down. So he was obsessing over his, in a good way, you know,
well,
just
no, he's,
for the exact
he's,
feel
he's,
that he was going for. And he was, you know, laying him down even after we thought the song was done, just at home. And I'm not even sure which one that was that ended up
that's
on
the very
track.
Last one.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I've worked with Louis. He's picky about his own stuff. He wants
to
get it right.
I'm picky about everything.
Yeah, but I mean, and I think it paid off. It really did work. I want to play. Well, since we're talking about Lou, I'm going to play a solo that you did just to kind of show some of because there are situations where you're actually doing something. You're taking the lead.
It's all their fault. They make me do it.
They make you do it. Yeah. I know.
Do something.
This is a clip called Off the Road, and I just grabbed the solo, and at the very end, and I it's fading out. You'll hear Jim doing some. He's starting to really crank on the drums. I had to fade it out because it's just so. It's a good clip, but my apologies. But it is a guitar show.
It's all good.
But anyway, so let me play this little clip, and this is called Off the Road, and. Tell me, we'll talk. Where there it is. My eyes are going bad. I'm not seeing this. Here you go. We'll be right back. Just grab that that bass. That's a great bass solo. I like that. That's pretty cool.
It's okay.
That was your Music Man, right?
Right. That's the Music Man.
Now, was that direct through that preamp, or was that on an amp? Did you use an amp to get that?
No. That's through an Alembic F2B, which is a tube preamp. It's basically the same schematics as a dual Showman or a Bandmaster, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then it's I forget the chorus unit that I used, but it's the same one that Anthony Jackson used on For the Love of Money.
Oh, okay.
So I found one used for about $35 at a pawn shop, and I bought it. And I used it on that. It has since died.
Yeah. You got to get it fixed. That's a great sounding little guy. And then what were you using? That acoustic guitar, was that?
That's a... my Ovation. I bought this purple Ovation guitar when I was on the road a few years back, and that was just the acoustic sound of it.
Right, you mic'd it.
Yeah, we mic'd it. It generally it sounds better if it's played electrified, but it had a certain thing. So that's the jingly jangly sound, and the other chord part was the ES-175. Again.
Oh, okay.
And then there's the background, hits of the little keyboard parts.
The keyboard parts.
That's guitar synth.
Yeah. No. It's a great sound. I like the fact that you use the acoustic in there. It gives it a different feel.
And that solo at the end, that was the Ovation.
The Ovation. So you did the whole solo on the piece.
Yeah.
So you guys have to buy this album. And you'll hear the whole. So there's. It was tough. I was telling them before the show, it was really tough pulling clips to kind of give a feel of the album and where they were going with it, because it's an instrumental album. They're playing all the time on there. So I'm trying to grab a moment that'll kind of give the mood of the piece and kind of give an idea of the style. But they're playing throughout, so, and there's a lot more cool stuff. I'm just giving you little snippets here. But there's all the songs. They're well-developed, and the solos in them are just killer. It's really good. I can't stress that enough.
We like to think of ourselves as writers as well as instrumentalists and arrangers and stuff. And
You guys are always – you guys are doing other stuff, too. I mean, you're session guys, so you're doing – you just played for a live gig, the Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
Oh, right, with Laurie Reamer and right. John Pratt.
You did that.
Yeah.
And you're busy. You're always doing stuff, too, and both – all you guys are playing all the time.
Bars and clubs and clubs and bars and bars and clubs and parties and all that.
So anyway, we're almost out of time, and I want to set up the last clip, which is really a cool groove. But first of all, what's going on for you guys? Where are you guys playing? And I heard a rumor about maybe a live album or something.
Well, in the future, we recently did a gig at the Baked Potato, and we recorded the whole gig, and we came up with some really good stuff. So we'll probably release that in the not-too-distant future. Also, at the same time, I want to thank Michael Dion over at ITI Records, and I want to thank our hard-working publicist, Danny Warren, over at Warren Marketing and Media, because he's always pushing us to be better.
Yes. Yes. He's a very nice guy. I talked to him earlier today, and... you're lucky to have him. I hope that your album, well, this album, I think, guys, Occupy Your Mind, it's on ITI Records. It's available everywhere, right?
So you can buy this, everywhere,
both digital and the CD. But you got to get the CD because the cover is really cool.
That cover is by Darren Grealish, who's a guy that I met through my hairdresser.
Okay. Okay.
She's a girl.
Okay. She. Okay, that's right. No, anyway, it's a great album, and you'll love all these cuts. They're great, and just it's definitely, it shows a girl with headphones. This is definitely a good
headphone. We call her Jade.
There's a definite, this is definitely a good album to listen through in headsets, because there's a lot of stuff going on, and it's very subtle. So, but anyway, are you guys playing?
Yeah. Yeah. We got some stuff coming up in the area, this Friday, 17th. It's going to be our first time at a, nice, restaurant pub in Malibu called Tavern One. It's, this Friday, the 17th from 7 to 10. And it's Sunday, the 19th, where, we play this place, a beautiful restaurant in Pasadena called Pop Champagne, here and there. Great food. It's, very subtle. We play very quietly there. It's, you know, it's the room itself and the vibe and everything is very relaxing. And
we're definitely looking to get out of town. And we're definitely looking to get out of town and go to Europe and go to Japan and,
yes,
and go
yes.
to Asia and all those places. In the meantime, like anybody else, we have to eat. We're also going to be doing Squash Grapes up in Ventura on March the 2nd,
mm-hmm.
which
Jasco.
Is another great place. Mm-hmm. Great people.
You guys do. So, you were guys were at the. You do the fairs, the bigger venues too.
For 4 or 5 straight years, we did the Orange County Fair. We also do the Sawdust Festival.
Okay, that's cool. No, that's mm-hmm. cool. Anyway,
and we got a baked potato show coming up on March 29th.
March 29th.
Thank you, Don Randy.
Yes,
and Justin.
Yes, I had Don Randy on the show a while ago, and he had shown. I had gone down to the baked potato. And their recording setup is cool. So I'm
waiting. Oh, it's great. It's great.
I'm dying to hear your live stuff
great.
With the mix
that's
with
great.
That.
Yeah. Brand new setup.
The albums, We Three, Occupy Your Mind, and I recommend everybody get it. It's a great album. I want to thank you guys for coming on the show. It's really great to have you back. And just give me a little bit. I'm going to play the last clip I'm going to play going out. Is called Cruising Down, and it's got a great guitar solo. That guitar solo, I had to play the whole clip. It's like it's like 2:30.
Thank you.
2 minutes and 30 seconds. Greg Manning's on keyboards. Anything else you want to say about it?
That's the...
What were you using?
That's the ES-175.
That's the ES-175.
Also, I haven't said it yet, but I've also endorsed with Seymour Duncan, and those are the Seymour Duncan SH-1 original pickups. And those are—they just sound amazing. So those are
SH-1s, yeah. And then you also are an endorsee for Hofner.
Hofner, yeah, I've been with them since 2012. And Pedal Train—they have Pedal Train mm-hmm. pedal boards, and now SIT Strings,
SIT.
Made in Akron, from right. where I'm from.
And that's the music man. That's the music man, Stingray.
You're using SIT
with Bartolini's and the Bartolini preamp, and it's also. Got Jim Dunlap strings on it.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, so anyway, this is Cruising Down. Check this out. Everybody have a great week. We'll be back next week. And again, thank you, all three of you guys. It's great to see you. And I look forward to having you guys come back.
Thanks for
and
having me.
Back on here. And I do have to do a drum show so we can sit and really talk about your drums. Anyway, this is Cruising Down. Everybody have a great night. We will see you next week.